This week on Know How, you're going to learn all about green screening, upgrade your Dogecoin miner, and fix an annoying Chrome browser pause.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know How is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit Lynda.com/knowhow. That's LYNDA.com/knowhow. It's go time. Welcome to Know How. It's the Twitch show where we build, break, and bend to upgrade your life into a new geeky nirvana. I'm Father Robert Ballister, your host, and this is the show that we're going to show you how to use Adobe green screening. We're going to show you how to fix that annoying bug in Chrome, and then we're going to upgrade your Dogecoin miner to give you a little extra Doge wow. But let's get down to the Adobe green screening. If you watched Know How, you probably saw our green screen special where I showed you how to create a green screen, the proper way to set your screen and your lightings and how to film it, how to grain it out in order to make it look right. Well, that's all and good, but what happens once you have that green screen footage? You need to drop it into an editor, and you need to key out the green in order to make it work. Let me show you how you're going to do it. Now, this is Adobe Premiere. I know many of you are going to be using different editors. You're going to be using Final Cut. You're going to be using Vegas. Some of you may be using Adobe Premiere Elements, but all of them have a tool that allows you to do green screening. In Adobe Premiere, that tool is found in Video Effects, in King, and then it's called the Chroma Key. The nice thing about the Chroma Key is it's a very simple tool to use. Over here, I have a double stacked layer of videos. And actually, this is a good time to explain something that works in Adobe Premiere and pretty much every other non-linear editor, and that is prominence of the layers. Just like Photoshop, every layer that you have gives you another level of prominence. In other words, the bottom layer is literally on the bottom. You go higher and higher and higher, and every layer that you go up, it puts that video or that clip or that photo on top of the one below it. This is important because we're going to be using that principle to key out one video and show elements from the one beneath it. Now, in order to do it in Premiere, what I've done is I've got two video clips here. The first one is of Brian Chee. We've got him in front of a very basic green screen. As you can see, it's not a perfect green screen. This is not the green screen from the IAS video special. There's a lot of wrinkles. There's a couple of corners that are dogged out, and you don't get uniform lighting. This is going to be problematic. We're going to show you how to fix that. But this is pretty much what you would get from a home setup. In the video below it, I've got a humdrum, basic vanilla scene that I took at CES a couple of years ago. What we want to do is we want to put Brian inside of that scene. Well, in order to make that happen, we've got to remove all the green beneath him. So let's go back to my Chroma Key tool. I'm going to grab it, hold it, drop it onto the clip. And now inside my effects window here in this preview window, I can drop down a Chroma Key effect. And right here, color lets me select what color the tool will remove from the video. Of course, I want to remove green, so I just click here, and I don't get a whole lot. This is what you're going to get with that home screen. And the reason why that doesn't happen, it doesn't remove everything, is because, as we mentioned, the screen is very non-uniform. There's a lot of different hues of green. I don't have that really expensive, really well-made professional screen. But luckily, all Chroma Keyers have settings like this, similarity and blend and threshold. What you want to do is just play around with these settings until it removes the required amount of green. In this case, I'm going to tell Adobe, take the green that I selected plus all the colors that are a percentage similar to it. So as I increase the similarity, the green starts to melt away. Now, here's the problem. I know you're going to want to get rid of all the green, but if you try to do it too much, well, every color starts being similar to green, and soon you end up with a disembodied cheaper. Don't do that. Just get to the edges, get to the fringes, get as close as possible, like right about there. And then start to blend it in. Blend in the edges to get rid of some of those problematic spots. Now, if I scrub through, as you can see, it's coming in and out. Chibert looks like he's disappearing in little bits, and that's because as he moves, his angle will change, and Adobe Premiere is trying to figure exactly what should stay and what should go. But this is a super basic chroma key effect. Something else we want to take a look at is we want to take a look at removing those dog edges. Brian, if you could zoom in on those corners right around here, on these sides here, you can just barely make out the faintest bit of green. Well, that's easy to remove because that's nowhere near the subject. We could either increase the similarity and the blend, but as I mentioned before, as you increase that blend, you increase the possibility that you're going to remove subject material that you don't want to get rid of, or we can use what's called a matte. This is important, especially if you have a green screen that doesn't completely cover the subject. If I go back into my King setting, I can pull up either a 4-point or an 8-point garbage mat. I'm going to take a 4-point garbage mat, and I'm going to drop it on top of this effect. Now, to make it easier for you to see, I'm going to remove the chroma key, so all you see is the green screen. And I'm going to kind of eyeball, well, how far out does Chibert go? You know, where can I set this garbage mat in order not to cut off any of his limbs? And it looks like right about here and right about here, those are the limits of his motion. Now, with the garbage mat selected, I can bring in these corners and remove those dog-edged, dog-eared parts of the green screen, especially up here in the corner, because if you see in the corner, the green screen didn't quite make it all the way up. Well, I can't get rid of that with the chroma key, but I can get rid of it with the garbage mat. Now, in combination with the chroma key, I've now gotten rid of all of those little dog edges, plus I've gotten rid of the green screen itself. You're going to find yourself using these tools in combination in order to get rid of those problematic spots on your green screen. Now, here's another sequence that I did a while back. I already pre-rendered this. This uses all of the elements that we talked about. I've got a time-lapse video underneath the main video, the green screen video. I've got a garbage mat to get rid of the corners, and I've got the chroma key to get rid of the green screen itself. And it looks just something like this. Now, as Alex Lindsay explained the other day, whenever you're doing a green screen, one of the best practices is to make sure that your subject starts and ends off the screen. And the reason for that is easy. It's because you don't want to have to worry about fading someone out in the middle of a key. Now, the other thing that you can do here, and this is something that, again, I love doing. Let's go back to the CES thing. You may need to resize it. Like, for example, in this video, Chibert looks a little bit too big. He looks as if he's maybe out of proportion. So I can use the same tools that we talked about in our Adobe 102 selection to shrink him down. Using the motion tool, I'm going to drop the scale of Chibert until he's closer to what real humans look like. And I just make sure that he's moved over and a little bit down. And now I've got Chibert, who looks like he's dancing in scale with everybody else. Again, this is down and dirty. You're going to have to find the way for chroma keying, for green screening that works best for you. If you're using Adobe Premiere Elements, I believe the tool is called Chroma Magic. I believe Final Cut actually calls it green screening. I can't remember exactly what the tool is called, but play around with it. The best way to learn green screening is to get a couple of clips, get a clean green screen, and then go ahead and drop yourself into it and start moving those sliders around until you find the desired effect. Honestly, that's the best possible way to learn. That's the way that I've learned, and that's the way that you're going to learn about green screening. Speaking of green screening, did you know that if you wanted to do it, you could just go to our sponsor, Lynda.com. Now, Lynda.com is the source for everything e-learning. You want to learn about audio and video editing? You want to learn software skills? Well, with easy-to-follow video tutorials on Lynda.com, you can learn at your own pace and on your own terms from top industry experts. With a Lynda.com subscription, members receive unlimited access to thousands of online video courses that cover a variety of software, creative, and business skills. You know what? It's 2014, so why not resolve to make yourself stronger in your skill sets this year? You can be stronger in video and motion graphic skills. They'll actually teach you how to do green screening. They'll teach you how to do storyboarding, color correction, lighting, and video editing. You can be stronger in software applications like WordPress, Raspberry Pi, Lightroom Fine, Final Cut Pro, Logic Pro, and GarageBand. Even stronger at photography. You know how to do programming, animation, audio, video design, and all. Now, you can improve your skills. You can learn new software and keep up with technology. But the key to lynda.com is that it makes it easy to do it. With over 2,000 courses, with new courses added daily, they will have the topic that you want to learn. Their instructors are working professionals at the top of their fields and expert teachers. These aren't people who just sit in a back room all day teaching the theory of the topic. They actually know how to do it. They've done it professionally, and they want to share their knowledge with you. They have high-quality video productions from state-of-the-art studios. These aren't those homemade studios with the shaky cam and the horrible audio. They know what they're doing, and they know that if you can't listen or watch for more than 5 minutes without wincing, well, you're just not going to have the learning experience that you want. They also have curated course content. Each lynda.com course is carefully structured so that the users can learn from start to finish or jump to a specific chapter for quick answers. If you want to learn about Adobe Premiere, you don't have to start at the start. If you already have a little bit of experience under your belt, you can jump to the chapter on green screening. You can jump to the chapter on motion. You can jump to wherever you need to be to match your skill set. They also have easy-to-follow videos that can help you find the answers you need just by searching for the question. And they have searchable transcripts that allow you to search inside a video to save time and find exactly what you're looking for. They have courses for all experience levels that cover a wide range of technical skills, creative techniques, business strategies, and more. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to learn something new in 2014 with lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire lynda.com course library. Or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise that lets you follow along with the instructor's projects using the exact same assets. And you can try lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/knowhow to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. They've also created a playlist with some of these courses to get you started. And you can get started today at lynda.com/knowhow. And we thank Lynda for their support of Knowhow. All right, now let's get to a quick tip. Let me ask you a question. Have you been a user of Chrome? Of course you're a user of Chrome. Everyone uses Chrome. It's a nice, lightweight browser that doesn't seem to get bogged down like Firefox or IE. But if you use Chrome, you've probably run across a little problem that I like to call the Chrome hesitation. At the very beginning, typically when you first boot it up or you first resume from sleep, you'll type an address into Chrome and it will hesitate. It will just sit there and it will say something on the bottom like resolving proxy. Well, do you want to get rid of that? You really should, because most of us don't use proxies. It's a feature that Google built in that they built into the Chrome in order to make it work with a lot of enterprise class networks that use some sort of web proxy. If you don't use a web proxy, Chrome spends time looking for a proxy that doesn't exist, which is why it hesitates. Let me show you how to get rid of that. Here we've got a standard Chrome browser. This is actually what mine looks like. If you go to the settings, and that's Totoro from my neighbor, go down to the bottom of the settings and show advanced settings. In the advanced setting tabs, you're going to see something here that says change proxy settings. And in change proxy settings, it will bring up this little box that should be familiar to anyone who's ever used Windows. This is actually the box that we used to have to set up our TCP IP SOX connection, which is always a pain in the butt. Well, under LAN settings, there's this automatic configuration. Now, it's trying to do you a solid. What it wants to do is it wants to make sure that this browser will work for everyone. But the problem is, if you don't use a proxy, it's just going to spin its wheels for a while it pings out to the network looking for one. If you're going straight into your own connection, forget that. Forget that noise. Dump it off. Get rid of the proxy simply by unclicking automatically detect settings and go ahead and click OK, OK, close it down. Now, when you go ahead and jump into any web page, it's never going to look for a proxy. It's going to go straight to your browsing experience, and it's going to save you a lot of time. This is one of those little hints that we've got at KnowHow that, it's cheap, it's fast, but it saves you aggravation, and really, is there anything better? Now, let's get over to Dogecoin mining. We generated a lot of buzz with our episode last week when we talked about simple crypto mining. Here's the problem. The episode that we did was all about mining with the CPU. And we know that that doesn't get you a whole lot. In fact, Brian, if you'll show the CPU on this machine right now, this is a pretty decent machine. This is what I use for video editing. I'm getting a total of, what, 4, 8, about 12 kilohash a second. That's not a whole lot. In fact, our other machine has been mining the entire week, and that has allowed us to get, a grand total of 2,774 Dogecoins. Brian, can you, what's the exchange rate on that?
Is it 0.00037?
Yeah, so let's see. Let's do that math. 0.0037, 2,000 coins will... that definitely doesn't pay for the electricity that that went into mining those coins. Now, the problem is that it's only using the CPU of the computer. And using only the CPU, well, that's not really efficient. What we need to do is we need to upgrade our machine in order to make your Doge a much better experience. So I'm going to clear out some space here to show you that machine and then show you what we're going to do to make it a little bit better for your Dogecoin mining. Now let me go off screen here while I pull up my handy dandy set of computer whoop arse. This is what your machine may look like if you're just sort of a standard computer user. This is an old Dell, if you can go to the overhead shot. This has an integrated graphics card. We actually put in a pretty low-end NVIDIA card in here. It has a gigabyte of memory. It has an old power supply. But it can mine Doge. It's actually running Windows 7. It's got a Core 2 Duo processor. What we want to do is we want to turn this into what I'm calling a mixed-mode computer. It's not a dedicated rig for mining coins, but it's something that we can mine coins with when we're not using and then switch back to mixed use or web use or work use when we need it. Now, the first thing that we're going to want to do when we consider how we're going to upgrade this is we want to consider how much power we have to work with. One of the things that people forget to do when they upgrade their computers is to check the basic components, including this. This is the power supply. This is the thing that provides power to all the components in the computer. The problem is, if we're going to be upgrading the graphics card, we have to account for that. This was a 200-watt power supply. It was just fine when it was running just the motherboard and a low-end video card and a hard drive. But if I put in a video card that in itself runs 200 watts, it's going to blow the power supply, and that's bad. Replacing the power supply is really simple. There's four screws in the back here. I removed those four screws, pull out the old power supply, and I've put in one here that's 500 watts. And then I just rewire everything. And rewiring a computer is actually really simple. The plugs pretty much only fit into one place. This is a PCI 6 card that will allow me to give supplemental power to my video card adapters, thereby sparing me from having to pull all that power off my motherboard. Now, that's one thing, the power supply. So we need to make sure we have the basic foundation. But there are a few other components I want you to consider. The first is this. This is system memory. Now, there's going to be people out there who say, wait, why am I upgrading system memory? I mean, if I'm going to be mining with a GPU, I don't really need system memory. It's going to be using the system. It's going to be using the memory inside the graphics card. Well, the reason why I want to upgrade my system memory is because, again, I'm creating a mixed-mode miner. Yes, most of the Dogecoin mining is going to happen in the GPU, but I want to be able to use this computer even when I am mining. And I can't do that if my memory is subpar. In this case, I've picked memory from Kingston. The reason why I use Kingston memory, well, I explained this in the episode about SSDs, is for reliability. I've never had a problem with the Kingston module, and I really don't want to do that, start having problems just because I upgraded for Dogecoin mining. This memory was used to upgrade this machine back here to 12 gigabytes, which is, unfortunately, that's the limit of this. This is an older Gateway FX box. Memory is one thing. This is the other. You're going to need SSDs. So, again, people are going to say, why do I need an SSD? If I'm Dogecoin mining, if I'm GPU mining, I'm not going to be really using the resources of the computer other than that video card. I give the same answer. The reason why you want to upgrade your SSD is because you want the computer to be snappy for you even when you're doing mixed mode mining, when you're having mining going on in the background, while you're surfing, while you're emailing, while you're doing your video editing, whatever it might be. Again, I choose the Kingston SSDs. You can look at our episode, I believe it's episode 65 on SSDs, to find out why I like Kingston so much. But in terms of reliability, I found nothing to be better. And in terms of speed, their KC300 series is, well, it's tops. Now, what I've done to this machine is I've gone ahead and upgraded the parts. That the hard drive is going to be replaced with this SSD. The memory has been upgraded into this box to 4 gigabytes, which is as much as high as it can go. And I've upgraded the power supply to 500 watts. So here's the rub. I know there are people out there, and I'm talking about you, Genesco 7, who are religious about NVIDIA cards. You love your NVIDIA cards. And to be perfectly frank, I like myself some NVIDIA cards too, because, well, they're really good for gaming. Here's the rub. Dollar for dollar, watt for watt, NVIDIA cards are nowhere near ATI cards for script-based mining. There's something about the architecture. There's something about the way that AMD/ATI have designed their video cards that just make them so much faster when you're mining Doge. I'll demonstrate that in a little bit. Now, this is an NVIDIA card, but it's pretty much what all modern cards are going to look like. You're going to want something that has fans, lots of fans. And you're also going to want a card that has some sort of heat transfer pipe, because we're going to be running these things at 100%. They are going to be cranking. You're going to be going up into 80, 90 degrees centigrade. You're going to want a lot of cooling. Just a heat sink and a tiny little fan that will wear out after a week is just not going to cut it. Now, the reason why we're choosing a card like this is because we want a lot of number crunching. One of my favorite resources is called the Wiki. The Litecoin Wiki, if we go there right here, it gives you a comparison of all the different GPUs that you can be used for Dogecoin or Litecoin mining. I'm going to put this link into the show notes so you'll be able to find the card for yourself. It breaks down the GPU model along with what kind of kilohash rate you can expect. Now, as you go up, as you can expect, you get into much higher hash rates. For example, the card that I have in this FX is a 5850. Which should get me about 341 kilohash per second. If you go even higher, you can go into, say, the 7990 series. This gets you some serious, serious power. I've actually got 4 of these 7990s coming in, which, according to the Litecoin Wiki, should get me somewhere in the vicinity of, 5,000 kilohash per second. That's off of 4 GPUs in one single dedicated rig. But again, that's not what we're doing. Once I've installed that video card into my machine and made sure that I've made all the necessary connections, we have to now configure the miner. Here's the thing I'm going to tell all of you cryptocurrency enthusiasts, and that is, overclocking is great. Specs are great. Make sure you get good memory. Make sure you get a good SSD. Make sure that you have a nice, clean operating system. But beyond all of that, beyond even the highest-end hardware, is going to be how you configure your miner. Let me show you an example. Here we have... let me turn off that CPU miner. I had that running in the background. That was probably a bad idea. Here we have the basic. If you were just to download the CG miner, which again we gave you in the downloads for last week, and I ran the default for an AMD GPU, here it is, mine with AMD GPU, it's going to give me a hash rate of about, come on, oh, wow, okay, 1.2, 3.7. Yeah, not really, really great. I mean, especially since I've now spent a couple hundred dollars on upgrading my rig, that's not the results I'm looking for. But what you need to look at is what's inside this batch file. We showed you a little bit about this last week. This is the default. This shows you how the batch file runs. It's running the program. It's telling it to mine script. It's telling it where the server is. It's giving it my username and my password, which, yeah, that will work. But that's not really going to tell me exactly how is the most effective method to use my rig to mine Dogecoin. If we look at the other two batch files I've created, take a look at this. This is the batch file I use for high power. So when I go to bed, when I walk away from my computer, this is the one that I use. Look at all the configuration. So it's the same thing. It's C, G minor. It's mining for script. It's giving it the server that I'm using. It's using here are my credentials for username and password. But then all of these things, WorkSide 256, Vector 1, Intensity 19, GPU threads, these are the individual settings that tell CG Miner what's the best way to use the GPU that you've selected. And where do you get these settings? Well, how about that? You can get it from the mining hardware comparison. If you go back to that page that we showed you before, look at the settings, and they actually tell you what are the optimal settings for the video card that you've selected. This is a huge time saver. The way that I learned how to do this before I found this wiki was I kept changing settings until I found the ones that were perfect. And unfortunately, if you change them in the wrong way, you freeze the computer. This is much better. Start with the mining hardware comparison, the Dogecoin wiki, and go from there. Now, let me give you one quick tip, one thing that I've learned. And that is, because this is a mixed mode, I want to create two batch files. Here's the high-powered one again. This is the one that I'm telling the computer, go ahead and take everything. You can control everything. You can have all the resources. I'm going to bed. I don't need it. But then I also have this one. This is the low-power setting. As you can see between these two files, I've dropped down the intensity in the low power file from 19 to 12. I've also dropped my thread concurrency from 5824 to 5800. The reason why I do that is because if I'm doing the low power setting, so in other words, I'm saying I want it to run in the background and not take over the computer completely, I need to reserve some of those resources for the regular things, watching videos, editing video, reading things on the internet. That's one of the settings that I can use to make sure that the miner isn't going to completely take over. Now, here's the cool thing. If I use the low power setting, so I've made a shortcut here on my desktop, I still have control of the computer. I can still do things. I can still bring up browsers. I can still web surf. But my hash rate's going to run around 200, 227. Again, not bad. It's a huge improvement over 12 and over 2. But if I run the high power setting, and I only want to do this once because I'm kind of going to lose control of the computer, the hash rate is going to jump as soon as it finds a blockchain here. Hold on, give it a time. Give it time to spool up. And now we're jumping up to 261, 300, 300 and so. This will get me all the way up to about 390 kilohash per second. Again, a huge improvement. Now, you want to have these two batch files on your desktop so that when you're working and you just want to have it running in the background, you can use the low power setting. But when you go to bed or when you go away to the office and you can dedicate the entire computer to Dogecoin mining, you click the high power setting and it will take over all the system resources. Now, when you do that, you'll notice, like, for example, I just double click this. See, it is really sucking up all my system resources. I can't. Come on, you can do it. Yeah. So if you're going to use the high power setting, make sure that you're not doing anything for a while, because it is going to monopolize every last bit of resource. Now, that is a mixed mode miner. The next time we take up Dogecoin, what I'm going to be showing you how to do is to make a dedicated miner. That means I'm not trying to share my resources with anything else. I'm not going to be using it for word processing or for email. I'm going to use it for pure, unadulterated Doge. That's next time on Know How. Now, I want to thank everyone for making this possible, especially Shannon, my super producer, my other super producer. I'm sorry, I don't want to make Carson Bondi jealous. To Brian, in fact, Brian, let me ask you, because you use a Mac, what's different about mining on a Mac?
It doesn't work as well. okay. But also there's a program, I think it's called Asteroid, that gives you a GUI that's a little bit more helpful if you're getting started.
Yeah. And actually, chat room, what I want you to do is, because Brian's really, really shy, we'd like to get him on the show more. I would love to give him a segment where he shows Mac people how they can get somewhat similar rates from their Dogecoin mining. Brian, would you be up for that?
I could give it a shot.
All right. Now, if you have any questions at all about what we did in this episode, you can always go to our show notes page. You can find us at twit.tv/KH. There you will find detailed instructions on everything I just did. Do you want to get the step-by-step on how to green screen? It's there. Do you want to know exactly what I did to speed up Chrome? It's there. Do you want to know what I did to this rig to turn it into a great mixed-mode miner? It's there. twit.tv KH. Also, you can reach us in a variety of ways. My personal favorite way is to find us at our G Plus page. That's gplus.to/KH. We have a very active community. I think we're about 5,300 users right now. And you can pose questions. You can ask for future topics. And I'm in there all the time. Seriously, just stop by and say hi. You can also find me at Twitter. Go ahead and tweet me at PadreSJ. There you'll find out what I'm going to be working on for future episodes of Know How. And you'll even see when I'm having issues, difficulties with a project, because I'm pretty open on my Twitter stream. Finally, I want to say, please, 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 no, really, please, email me at twitkh, or what is it again, at knowhow@twit.tv, and I'll try to get back to you as soon as I can when I have an answer for whatever you've asked me. I'm Father Robert Ballister, and I think I've pretty much wrapped everything up here after our jaunt to CES, and now that you know how to do all this stuff, go do it.